विष्णुपाद परमहंस प्रिय ब्रज गचार्य आष्टोत्तर तत श्री श्रीमाधव सेवाएं ग्रेस ओभय चरण अरविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस प्रिय ब्रज गचार्य आष्टोत्तर तत श्री श्रीमाधव सेवाएं ग्रेस श्रील भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज प्रभुपाद की जय आनंद कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ISKCON BBT, Founder of Charge, Srila Prabhupada ki jay. Nama Charge, Srila Haridas Thakur ki jay. Vimsikahosi Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nithananda Shuddhaita Gadadha Srivastari Gaur Bhakti Vrindi ki jay. Sisi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Sham Kundradha Kundgiri Govardhan ki jay. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jay. Sri Mayapur Navadit Dham ki jay. Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Shamaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Thai Go Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Shamini Chinamini. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharini Nirvishesha Shinyavadi Pachati Pachatini. Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nithananda Shuddhaita Gadadhar Shvatsari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the ninth canto, chapter 19, text 13. Yat. Prithivyam. Brihi Yavan Hiranyam Pashava Sriya Na Duyanti Manaha Pritam Pritim Pungsa Kama Matasya te yat privityam brihijavam prihityam hiranyam pashavastriyaha na duyanti mana pritim pumsam kama hatasya te Ya prithityam prithiyasham prithityam prithiyasham hiranyam pashavastriyaha One moment, please. Na duyanti mana prithim punsakama hatasyate Ya prithivyam brihiyavam hiranyam pashavastriya na duyanti mana prithim punsakama hatasyate hatasyate Prithivyam Brihiyavam Hiranyam Pashavastiyaha Nadiyanti Manaha Pritim Kumsakama Hatasyate Brihiyavam Yeah. Ladies, Priti Yam Brihi Avan Yam Pashavastriyaha Priyanti Mana Pritim Kamahatasyate Brihi Avan. Diyam brihi ava yat what prithivyam within this world brihi food grains rice, yavam, barley, hiranyam, gold, pashavaha, animals, sriyaha, wives or other women, na duyanti, do not give, manaha pritim, satisfaction of the mind, Punsaha to a person. Kamahatasya because of being victimized by lusty desires. Te they. Translation. A person who is lusty cannot satisfy his mind, even if he has enough of everything in this world, including rice, barley, and other food grains, gold, animals, and women. Nothing can satisfy him. Purport. Improvement of one's economic condition is the aim and object of a materialist. But there is no end to this material advancement, for if one cannot control his lusty desires, he will never be pleased, even if he gets all the material wealth of the world. In this age, we see much material improvement, but still, people are struggling to get more and more material opulence. Mana sastanindriyani prakriti stani karshati. Although every living entity is a part of the Supreme Being, because of lusty desires, one continuously struggles for so-called betterment of one's economic condition. To have a satisfied mind, one must give up his heart disease of lusty desires. This can be done only when one is Krishna conscious. Bhaktim param bhagavati patilabhya kaman hridrogam ashvapatnoti achirena dhiraha. If one becomes Krishna conscious, then he can give up this heart disease. Otherwise, this disease of lusty desires will continue and one cannot have peace in his mind. So I had good experience of this in India. Somehow or other, I took some medicine or caught some virus and it created a rash on my body. And the doctor said it would go away in 5 days. 5 days later, it didn't go away. It actually got worse. So I went to another doctor who changed the medicine and said it would go away in 5 days. And 5 days later, it got worse. So it was actually growing down my, started on my hips and started growing down all the way to my feet on both legs, on my arms, on my stomach and up my back. So about 3 weeks, I was getting a little concerned. So I finally surrendered and went to a real doctor in a real hospital. They actually have real nice hospitals in Delhi, if you can afford to pay for them. So anyway, the good news was I ended up in an Ayurveda clinic, and that was really the cure. But the point was, it was so itchy that it was a personification of this verse. Because there was no use in scratching it.
Because every time I touched it, it became more itchy. So normally, when you have an itch, you scratch it, and what happens? Relieves the itch. Well, these scratches, if I scratch them, they would increase. So it was a supreme paradox. You know, I'd feel the itch, and I'd scratch, and then it would itch more. So it was a kind of torture. But it was a personification of this principle here. I thought Krishna maybe was teaching me something about material existence. So this is this story of Yayati is interesting. In several ways I find it interesting. I find it interesting that when at first Yayati, he was cursed to become an old man, so if somebody is young but spiritually advanced, they'd probably think, well, that's good, because that will help my spiritual life. I'm 20 and then I turn into an 80-year-old man. Then I would become even more renounced and there would be less possibility of being diverted from Krishna consciousness. I don't know if any of the 20-year-old men today in our movement would like to become 80 immediately. But I suspect those who are spiritually advanced wouldn't mind, or perhaps he would, might even think it was useful or beneficial. But then we have the example both of Yayati and his other sons. Yayati didn't want to accept that curse, neither did his sons, except for one son. And it was interesting, I also find it's interesting. Well, it's a paradox because for us, every material reversal, we see it as something positive. So nowadays we find that when men get older, they're not satisfied that they're getting older. So what do? They take Viagra. Or other whatever else they take. So a transcendentalist who's getting older thinks, well, this is good. My senses are subsiding. The agitation is subsiding. This is a good thing. And the materialist thinks it's a bad thing. My senses are subsiding. I need to stimulate them. So Yayati wasn't ready. He wasn't on that platform. His sons weren't on that platform, except for Puru. But Yadu, he made an interesting point, which also helps us understand the story better. He said, this isn't going to work for me. And perhaps he knew that Krishna was going to appear in his dynasty, but he knew his future. And he said he was already thinking of renunciation when he was young, because he said, it won't work for me to get old too soon, because if I get old too soon, I won't have the realization of an old man. So I'll just have an old body, but I'll have the desires of a young man. So it's not going to work for me. So I find it interesting because he was well aware that that was the goal, to renounce. And at the same time, he's saying, I have to enjoy in order to renounce. Which is not the way most people think. You think, I have to enjoy to enjoy. Right? You don't think I have to enjoy to renounce. But I was thinking it's something like eating, just like we eat, but we don't think when we're eating, the goal of eating is to eat all day. We think the goal of eating is really to stop eating, to become full, become nourished, and stop eating. So that's kind of, you could say, how Yadu was thinking. He was thinking, yes, the goal of enjoying is to stop enjoying. So I have to enjoy in order to stop enjoying. I have to become satiated. And then when I'm older, when the body no longer has the ability to enjoy, the heart also won't have the desire to enjoy. And in one of the purports previously, or in the future purports, Prabhupada talks about the famous, I don't know if it's famous, but he talks about the 80-year-old men and going to nightclubs, naked nightclubs. Still the desire is there. So the desire is not corresponding with the nature of the body. Right? The body says, okay, it's time to slow down, and the desire says, let's continue. So Yadu was thinking like that. If I become an old man, it's not going to work. I'll have an old body, but young desire. So that means, as a king, he was aware that he had to renounce. So we could assume also Yayati was also aware of that, that someday I have to renounce. So their idea was, their realization was, it's not going to work if I renounce now. Even I understand I should do it, it's not going to work unless I have it. So, which brings up the point that sometimes we say that it is suffering that causes renunciation. But that's only half of what causes it, because what we're hearing here is there has to be some satiation. Sometimes we say, well, if you suffer enough, you'll renounce. And that may be true, but it depends on the individual. Just like Prabhupada's father, when Prabhupada said, I'm not really attracted to my wife, he said, well, that's good, because then you'll see Krishna as attractive. But then someone else may say, well, if you're not on that level, if you're not attracted to your wife, you won't be satisfied. And then when you're an old person, you'll say, I was never happy in family life, and maybe it'll be difficult for you, or you'll want to remarry or whatever. So depending on one's realization, one is either going to understand or be able to renounce through suffering, or one is going to renounce through becoming satiated, or a combination of both. I think for most people, it's a combination of both. Because generally, pain motivates people more than pleasure. Just like we see, if you ask somebody, why did you become a devotee? And they'll say, well, it was the association, it was the kirtan, it was the prasadam, it was the philosophy. But that's not the only reason. It was also because you were suffering, or you realized you were suffering, you're not perfectly happy. It wasn't just one. And it wasn't just that you were suffering that you became a devotee, but it's because there was something attractive. There was some pleasure. So one is pushing behind you like a dog chasing you, and one is alluring you like the donkey with the carrot, right? So generally, most people need both of them. Now, sometimes after you take the Krishna consciousness, you find you run into trouble. And maybe you can't follow as well. Although you think you understand, or you think you've understood that the material world is not really ideal for you, or you're not going to be happy, but still you slip. So this actually happened in the time of Bhaktisiddhanta with some disciples who asked him, after they had fallen down or they weren't able to follow the principles on a regular basis, why? Well, I don't even think they asked why, they just told him. And so he explained what Prabhupada's explaining here, one of the points. He said there are two reasons. One, ridaya dhorbalyam, weakness of heart, and the other, lack of intelligence. I think they go together. What do you think, Madan Mohan? Weakness of heart and lack of intelligence, they seem to be interconnected.
Manda sumanda mata yo manda bhagya, it talks about manda. So sometimes it's rascal and sometimes it's slow. And Prabhupada said, yes, they're both the same. The reason one is slow is because he's a rascal. Is that all right?
Yeah. So when you have a weak heart, you have a weak intelligence, and when you have weak intelligence, you have a weak heart. And when you're slow, you're weak. And like so. So what's a weak heart? Well, a weak heart is an undue attachment which is not healthy. You could say there's a point of attachment that's healthy, and beyond that point, it's unhealthy. And here we're learning in this story this phenomena that it took Yayati 1,000 years, and you might think, wow, that's a really long time to figure this one out. It took him 1,000 years to figure out he couldn't be happy. But it's not so amazing. I mean, Conditioned souls have been in the material world a lot longer than 1,000 years, and they haven't figured it out. So you think, well, why did it take him so long? I'd say, well, he had a weak heart, and he wasn't very smart. So then we can look at our own life and say, and I think we all ask ourselves this question, why is it that I understand this won't make me happy, and I continually do it? Because we have an attachment to it, and we're not that smart. Now, there's an interesting twist to this, which is explained by Patanjali, which I think will be very helpful for us to learn. Now, Patanjali says something about attachment. This is quite interesting. He says, the way attachment develops, and also the way detachment develops, is based on your past memory of the experience. If the experience was enjoyable, then you become attached to doing it again. And if the experience was not enjoyable, you become detached from it. So just like sometimes you'll find in your own life or the life of other people, you'll say, would you like to do this? And they'll say, no, I don't want to. That's usually because they had a bad experience with it, either in this life or another life, or that genre of activity. It's just the concept of doing that is basically yucky in your mind, for lack of a better word. They say some people fear public speaking more than they fear death. So if you take one of those persons who fear public speaking and you say, we have 1,000 people here, would you like to speak? The connotation of that is misery. So they say no, because they're relating that to misery. So they're very detached from public speaking, right? Now, if you're someone who likes to speak in public and have never spoken to 1,000 people, if you say, would you like to speak to 1,000 people? The concept is, that will be enjoyable. So, yes, I want to do that. So Patanjali says, if you have an experience in this world that's enjoyable, you become attached because you enjoyed it. So when you think of it, there's enjoyment. So that's why you become attached. Does that make sense? I did it in the past, it was enjoyable, so I want to do it again. The problem is, if it's detrimental to your spiritual advancement or physical or mental or emotional stability, that's not good. But in the same way, you had some experience and it was negative. I think for some people, the experience was another lifetime. You could see some people are just not attached to certain things in this lifetime. And you can't even trace out the experience, a negative experience in this life. You're just not attached. You see sometimes people who aren't even practicing spiritual life are sometimes detached from certain things that devotees are attached to. So according to Patanjali, it would be that some negative experience, some negative, what is called samskara, an impression. So then he says, well, how do you become detached from something that you're attached to? What's the process? He said, well, you have to attach something negative to it. You have to attach a negative to what you're attached to. And that's where intelligence comes in. You have to look at it and say, okay, if I do this, which I really like to do because it gave me pleasure in the past, but there's a consequence and I see the consequence is negative. So he said, meditate on the negative consequence. Now it's funny, it's interesting. If you actually analyze happiness in the material world according to the way Krishna describes it in the Bhagavad Gita, in happiness in the 3 modes of nature, there's always misery. It's just the order of the misery is changed according to the mode. So in the mode of ignorance, the happiness and misery are simultaneous. In the mode of passion, the happiness comes first and the misery comes after. In the mode of goodness, the misery comes first and the happiness comes after. But in every state, there's misery. Correct? Mode of goodness, it's simultaneous. The misery is happening while you're enjoying, if that makes sense. Kind of an oxymoron. In passion, you get the enjoyment now, buy now, pay later. And in goodness, you do the austerity, and then you get to enjoy the result. Poison in the beginning, nectar in the end. So there's suffering in each stage. So now an intelligent person will think, all right, well, sounds like material happiness is, there's a lot of suffering. It's just when you get it. The only difference is when you get it. So maybe in goodness it lasts longer, or you get to enjoy it more, or maybe there's less suffering, but still suffering is involved. So then person says, okay, if I do this, then I'm going to either suffer while I do it, suffer after I do it, or suffer before I do it. So by attaching, by having a realistic view of it, then Patanjali says you become detached. Because you'll start to equate pain with that activity. And that's why we, a person or ourselves, we continually do something that gave us pain, but we do it again because we forget the pain that it caused in the past. Or, as Prabhupada says in the story of Kardama, said when he said he was enjoying with his wife and he forgot about his spiritual life. So Prabhupada said, when a man is embraced by his wife, he forgets everything about spiritual life. And then you have this phenomena where a couple, either married or boyfriend and girlfriend, they keep breaking up and coming back together and saying, I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I love you. Right? Very common. So why is that? Because when I love you, they're remembering the pleasure. And when I hate you, they're remembering the pain, or they're experiencing the pain, or they're experiencing the pleasure. But they forget, why do we keep breaking up? Because we keep running into trouble and fighting and screaming and throwing things at one another and cursing at one another and causing us. What? They're doing that because? Oh, they haven't killed each other yet, yeah. So when they remember that, they say, I think we should live in other parts of the universe. And when they forget that, they say, I love you, I can't live without you. So when you remember the pleasure, you become attached. When you remember the pain, you become detached. That's the idea. So this is Patanjali's way to help us activate our intelligence, because here Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, well, he's saying the reason you gave in to your lust or your desires because your intelligence is not strong, your heart is weak, the attachment. Because I'm attached, all of a sudden I forget that the last 100 times I did this, I got kicked in the face. The Prabhupada gives the example of the dog. Dog comes, throw something at it. He doesn't realize when he comes back you're going to throw it again. So that's dog intelligence. So this is a little insight for us in perhaps understanding our own psyche of why we may understand something to be a cause of pain, but still remain attached. Now, Narada Muni did this when he showed Murgari the hunter what was going to happen. Just like you look at India right now. I was just recently in India and they were telling me there's a leaf that's poisonous. And a lot of women in the village, when they have a baby girl, they just feed the baby girl the girl dust. Or they just put a plastic, you know, they don't want the baby girls. Now it's obvious, it seems obvious to me that they don't know they're going to become a baby girl in their next life and the same thing is going to happen. Or women who are aborting children, they don't know, as Prabhupada said, they'll be aborted as well. And one would think if they knew that, they would probably stop doing it, or many would stop doing it. So this is how Krishna works in this world to help regulate our activities by creating problems for sinful activities. There's reactions. And you can go to scripture and you can find out what the reaction is before you do it. And that way you might consider it's not a good idea to do it. That's the idea. And if you don't know and you do it, then Krishna puts the fire behind you. There's a saying, people don't change when they see the light. They change when they feel the heat. So that's how Krishna does it, right? Krishna works it that way. Or when you sit in a chair, when you're uncomfortable, you move. You move around. So Krishna won't get you so comfortable. He'll move you around a little bit, right? Otherwise, we get too comfortable in the material world. So Krishna uses this, but we have to be intelligent enough to take advantage of it. Otherwise, he'll use it and we won't learn from it. Well, I did that 3,000 times and I suffered. But maybe the 3,000 the first time, it'll be different. Any one of you ever think like that? Didn't work 3,000 times. I had the wrong strategy. I got a new book. It's given me the strategy. This is like Prabhupada here is saying, you know, you can't be satisfied no matter what you had. How many wives, how many maidservants did Yayati have? He had 1,000. That's a lot. I don't think Hugh Hefner has that many girlfriends. And even if he does, he's still looking for another one. It doesn't. So, in other words, Yayati had way more than any of us will ever have. And it didn't work for him. He couldn't figure out how to make it work. And he had a lot of facility to make it work. He was a king. So, what is actually happening, or the way I always see it, to get myself out of this mess, there's just one little simple thing, and Prabhupada's explaining it here, that Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita. It's the mode of passion. As long as you're in the mode of passion, nothing works to satisfy you. Doesn't matter how many you have. So our society is in the mode of passion. That's why no matter how many cell phones you've had, when the new one comes out, you want it. Right? Well, if you're under 35, you want it. If you're over 50, you're like, eh, maybe. You'll buy it on eBay 3 years later. And if you're over 70, then you think, why are all these kids so enamored by these cell phones? But this is the way our economy works, because it impregnates this concept within our consciousness that if you have this, you'll be happy. And so then you get it, and it doesn't work. And they keep convincing you the reason you're not happy is because our new one, which is coming out next week, you didn't buy it, isn't it? And you know, you buy it and you read in the paper that the new one came out and you're like, oh no, I could have got the new one. And this programming is there within all of us because it's the way our economic system has to program us for it to work. So we are programmed to think more is better. If you have more money, you'll buy a bigger house. If you have enough money, you'll buy a better car. It's not like the average person when they win the lottery, you know, they're living in the trailer and they stay living in the trailer. No. Now I have money, so bigger is better. Let's get something bigger. Four bedrooms is better than three, right? Isn't it? That's our programming. More is better. And the other programming is we don't have enough. So as long as we think more is better and we don't have enough, what are we going to do the rest of our life? We're going to work. And when we finish work, we're going to go to our second job because more is better and I can get more money and I can buy more things. And that's why the word mortgage comes from the French word mortier, which means death. Material death and spiritual death. So anyway, it's important for us to understand that this programming is going on out there. If you read papers, if you read news, if you turn on the television, you turn on the radio, you're getting this program. And if you hang out with people who have this programming, they'll give it to you also. Because they'll tell you, you know, the new such and such came out, you should get it. So the programming is coming everywhere. So important principle for us to understand is the word samskara. Samskara, we know, means purificatory rite, but it also, in the sense we're talking about it here, it means impression. So these are all impressions that we're getting. What we hear creates an impression. The stories we hear create impressions. What we see creates impressions. So what we are trying to do as devotees are create impressions which enable us to be Krishna conscious, to enable our intelligence to be clear so we can become so we can live our life in a way in which we eventually become detached, and while doing it, we don't become entangled. But there's also all these negative samskaras. And so the way to understand it is, think of your mind like clay, and samskaras are molding your mind in different ways. So what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're learning, the culture, the environment we create for ourselves or we exist in, it's molding our mind in a particular way. And then as the mind is molded, we see the world according to that mold. And then according to the way we see, we react. If you think a rope is a snake, you'll run away. If you see things differently, you act differently. So when you're in Krishna consciousness, you look at something, it looks one way, and you say, no, that's not for me. And when you're in material consciousness, it looks another way. And you say, that's for me. Do you remember, some of you went to the patron dinner, and Dattatreya was there doing his magic. And he would take your spoon off the table, and he would do abracadabra, and the spoon would bend. Anybody saw that trick? And you're looking at that, and you're saying, how did you do that? And who's going to replace all the spoons at the women's club? But he probably only had one spoon, and just it appeared. But that's what Maya's like. You look at it, and you can't figure out why you're attracted to it. It's mystical. Why am I attracted to this? And if you try to figure it out, you might never figure it out. But we know what we're supposed to be attracted to and not attracted to. And one thing for certain is a very, very interesting thing that I think about a lot. Prabhupada came at a time when it seemed the wrong time to tell people to not have sex and don't take drugs, because it was right at the sandhya, the border of when it all started happening. It was like the time of the explosion. And so only we can understand that here Prabhupada's thinking, I have the holy name. The holy name can break through all of that. And it did. So no matter how mystical or magical Maya is, Prabhupada said, he had a quote, he said, the magic is the chanting. So Maya is magical and mystical, but the chanting's magical and mystical, and it's more powerful than Maya. So that's our hope. I can't even understand how to become detached, but then there's our hope that Krishna is so powerful. And Prabhupada said, he said, whatever problem you have, you go to Gaur Nitai and you say, my dear sir, this is my problem. And Prabhupada said, and they will do the needful. So that's how we approach this situation. I'm so attached, I don't know where it's going to end. I'm never satisfied. How do I get out of it? Go to Gaur Nitai, my dear sir, this is my problem. And they'll do the needful. And what's the needful they'll do? They'll give us the detachment and the intelligence. So we're not Dorbal Yum and we're not foolish, because that's how we're going to make it. At least that's my realization. I think that's what Prabhupada also, how he understood it. So we'll end here and we'll wait for Madan Mohan's comments.
Thank you. I was just, because you asked me that question, a couple more answers came in after I didn't have the mic anymore. But I was just thinking, Prabhupada defined intelligence as a power.
Intelligence as power.
A power to analyze in the correct perspective. And then you also, in the Bhagavad Gita, mentions if you contemplate the objects of the senses, that intelligence is lost. So how do you get it? Like the turtle withdraws his limbs, you withdraw it from the sense objects. So instead of seeing the sense objects, there's another spiritual reality to see. So if one sees like that, he gets that information from the spiritual master. And just like you were saying about the mode of passion to the mode of goodness, it changes the bodily conception of life is in the mode of passion, but in the mode of goodness. And hearing Bhagavad Gita, he knows that all living entities are in me and are mine. So it changes in interpersonal dealings, that he becomes a servant of Krishna, and he's out of the bodily conception of life because he sees that they all belong to Krishna. They're all Krishna's, to be enjoyed by Krishna. And if he acts like that, then he becomes attached to Krishna. And then, because I don't think you can become detached. Can you in this world? I mean, the Buddhists try it, the Mayavadis try it, but it's the nature.
Well, I was saying with that example, with the dog running behind you, and it seems that's the combination that Krishna is using, you know? Raso Varjam, get the taste, and then put the heat under you so you have no alternative. I'd like to go back to material life. Well, there's a saying, I saw a t-shirt, it said, how much can I get away with and still go to heaven? So, that's the idea. If I could get away with more, I would. If I could do less, I would. If I could enjoy more and suffer less and still make it to Krishna Loka, yeah.
Is that the cheating propensity?
Yeah, I think so. Or we're always looking for a shortcut, easy way out. Of course, Prabhupada said you have the easy way out. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. But as you said, in Kali Yuga, people are lazy. So it's almost like we want someone to chant our rounds for us. Prabhu, I chanted a few extra rounds today. Would you like them? I could donate them to you. Yeah, that would help me out. Give me more time to watch television. Vyasa Shuno.
Hare Krishna. So while studying this chapter, you know, one logical question came up to me. If in this story of the she-god and he-god, they enjoy for 1,000 years, and how come that there is no little goats after that?
How come there are no little goats? Well, Prabhupada said the demigods, they have given the benediction to enjoy sex with in their entire life, and they only have one child. So maybe they had...
But he wasn't a demigod.
But maybe they had that shakti to be able to do that. Or are you thinking they took contraceptives?
Well, before he had 5 sons.
One thing I can say for sure is that the status of these kings and people at that time is in such a different category that it's not difficult to imagine that they could adjust things any way they wanted. But what one... It's also interesting how you see these great kings and very dharmic, and the other side you'll see this very ordinary activity of sensual activity. So they kind of, you know, they seem to operate simultaneously in two worlds, which maybe in Kali Yuga we can't well operate in both, at least as well as they. This appears all in all out sense enjoyment and maintaining some concept of dharma. So maybe there was a dharmic way they were doing it. Does anybody know what the trick was? How they never had children? Maybe we shouldn't tell us, because then we might want to do it. So if you know, don't tell us. Yeah, it's on.
It's on. Anyway, it's a story that Yayati invented, but you can...
Louder.
Hare Krishna. Yayati invented this story, so you have to check with him.
Yayati what?
He actually invented the story. Even.
Oh, he invented the story. Yeah, that's true.
If you're taking it literally, then you need to learn more English.
Oh, so then you're asking, it's not analogous? Well, in his mind, I guess it was analogous. Maybe the she-goat had a lot of kids, and we don't know about them. Of course, ultimately, it's a good point, because we talk about responsible sex and irresponsible, so irresponsible is have sex and no children. That's the You have to be a demigod to do that. I heard Amarendra, if I remember correctly, say that Prabhupada said many of us are like we want to be demigods. We want Krishna, but we want material enjoyment. Someone else, yeah. Dharmaraj.
Many times, you know, the hassles of these histories or stories that have to the Bhagavatam.
You know what?
All these stories that are there. Okay. So they are there for a reason. And we find in many of these stories that only what is pertinent for us and for the Bhagavatam, that parts of the stories are there. So it's, in other words, what I'm saying, that whether they had children or whatever the after result was necessary.
Yeah.
So
it's not an important detail. Yeah. So that was a polite way of chastising you for asking that question. Yes. The ladies have a comment? Tulsi Rani.
This might be a stupid question. I'm just trying to figure out why Krishna created this material world in the way he did. You explained when you were discussing Patanjali's philosophy and how we get like just karmic reaction. You gave the example of someone gets an abortion in this life, in the next lifetime they'll be aborted most likely. But I'm just wondering why Krishna doesn't make that information more readily available to people. Because if they knew that,
right,
then they wouldn't, you know,
well,
do
I was,
that.
I was thinking, when I was thinking of this example, I was thinking someone in India ought to put up billboards. Say, if you abort your baby, you're going to be aborted in the next life. If you kill your baby, maybe the government should make propaganda. But there's a nice story. Not the exact same question, but it may answer your question. Narada Muni was with Narayan, and he said, why don't you liberate everybody? And Narayan said, they don't want to be liberated. And he said, and Narada Muni was puzzled. He said, okay, I'll show you. He said, you could go to the material world, pick somebody, and tell them they can be liberated. I'll liberate them. So Narada Muni goes to this man, says, I've come from Narayan. Narayan has agreed to liberate you. The man says, thank you, but my daughter's getting married. Could you come back after the wedding? Comes back after the wedding. Not the day after, but comes back. So it's okay to go? Yeah, but she's pregnant. And I, you know, just like to see my grandson or daughter. Comes back a few years later. Okay, we're ready. Yeah, but he's going to go to school. Comes back to you. Yeah, but he's graduating from school. Yeah, but my grandson's now getting married. So it went like that. Until he died, and I think he became a snake in his next life, right? And then he was ready. Wasn't ready until he became a snake. So I think one aspect of it is that people are reluctant. That's one. And we can say the other aspect is that it's our duty. In other words, why didn't Krishna do it? He's going to do it through us. We're going to be the ones. There's the nice story. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was preaching in Bengal, and he told Prabhupada, the people here aren't very interested. And Prabhupada said, they're not interested, or you can't make them interested. So that's how we should see it. That Krishna is making it available. There's a reluctance, and number one, and maybe a reluctance on our part to do as much as we can or to do what's necessary. That's there also. Kind of it works together, you know. But that was just a thought I had, you know, if there was more awareness. Because anytime you speak to somebody, if you tell them, if you can convince them by doing this, you'll suffer, it wakes them up. And then it really, really, suffering is a powerful motivator for change. To give up, to be able to do something you didn't think you could do. If the consequences are great suffering, you can often do it a lot easier than you thought you could. So Krishna uses that, because if we can fall back on a wonderful life in this world without suffering, the impetus to be Krishna conscious will be reduced. Maybe reduced entirely. Yes.
Now, we hear of God-fearing man.
And we hear of
God-fearing man. And then sometimes when we speak to people, they would ask, why are you giving that example and talking about the miseries of life? Are you obsessed with death and miseries and so forth?
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, because I made a discovery. After 35 years of having a really hard time convincing people that this world is a place of suffering, I found a way to do it. And it really works well in the present day and age. Lord Buddha's Four Noble Truths, three of them are: the world is suffering. Suffering comes from attachment. And if you want to become free from suffering, become detached. If you hide behind Buddha, because Buddha is so popular, and you say, here, this is what Buddha taught, people accept it. That's what I found, because Lord Buddha's teachings are so popular, and many people are familiar with them. And if they're not, you make them familiar. No, here Buddha says, world is suffering, comes from attachment. You know, the story Prabhupada tells, this man is walking, and he's looking up, and he sees a boy playing with a kite on the roof of a house. And he sees the boy is not looking. He's not looking where he's walking. He's looking at the kite. And he runs up from the bottom up to the roof of the house to save the boy right when he's about to walk off. And the boy screams at him. Boy was thinking everything's fine. It's no problem. So, what can we say? Someone's, you know, heading for death and they think there's no problem.
One final thought I was thinking is, because Krishna says, you're my dear friend, I can tell you some other things that I haven't told anybody else. And Krishna then explained what the spiritual world was like. Buddha has no spiritual world, impersonalists have no spiritual world. These other religions have no conception of what goes on there. So Krishna, he gives us that understanding so we can see where of all these things come from. We're a chip off the old block, that the living entity has its eternal position in a relationship, in an attachment with family in the spiritual world. And nobody else has that information of what it's being reflected from, why we're being forced, what that weakness of heart ultimately changes into. That's the special, special thing that Prabhupada gave to this world that nobody else had.
On that note, we'll tell a Buddhist joke. This is a Jew who became a Buddhist. And in the Bible it says, treat others as yourself. And in Buddhism, it says there is no self. So the Jewish Buddhist thinks, now I guess I'm off the hook. There is no self, so I don't have to treat any others as myself. And if there is no afterlife, then there's no responsibility. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.